we'll bring you a tribute to the late Shel Epstein, K9APE, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the Rain Report. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY. A familiar voice on Chicago's North Shore, both on 2 meters and 440, is gone. Shel Epstein, K9APE, was a volunteer counsel for the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League. Shel also was an articulate engineer and businessman. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, interviewed Shel twice. The first time was 1989. Here is Blair Alpert, KA9SEQ, to introduce that conversation from 25 years ago.
The Rain rerun you're about to hear was recorded at the 1989 Dayton Hamvention. It's all about risk-taking, something we all did in the process of studying and subsequently passing those exam elements to hold the call signs we do, and the frequencies we are privileged to use. Here is Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, with a program he put together back when he was producing the RP Report prior to Rain.
This is the RP Report. Many complain today that amateur radio needs a dose of the fountain of youth, that young people hold the key to amateur radio's future. Is there an inherent flaw in this reasoning? Shel Epstein, K9APE, is an engineer, attorney, and businessman in Wilmette, Illinois, with two grown children of his own who are not involved in the amateur service.
The young people today were not exposed to the same media we were exposed to. I talk about how the pictures on radio were better and how I used to come home in the winter months and turn on an old Stromberg Carlson console radio and watch the 65 Magic Eye tuner light up, and you'd sit back in the dark and watch the tubes glow, and you'd see better pictures than anything you'd see on the networks today. You can't blame the kids so much as we have to look at where we've gone as a society. When I was growing up in the Chicago public school system, there were two things that were different. Number one was we knew the system wasn't any good. And if anybody wants to quote me, the call's K9APE. That's nothing new, but we didn't take it seriously, and it was a very segregated school system, and being Jewish, I went to a school that was segregated for largely Jews only and that kind of thing. It was in grammar school up to the age of 14. Grammar school in Chicago, we didn't have a junior high school system. And the neighborhoods were ethnically divided, and that kind of thing went on. I'm not saying it was right, but that's the way it was. The teachers were dedicated to taking the bright kids, in some sense, and encouraging them to go farther. Today, a couple things have happened. We've asked the school system to play the role of the parent, which it should never do. The school system isn't any good. In fact, it's worse now than it was then. And instead of trying to take a few good people and raise them up, public education has become a leveling force, and it's aimed at the lowest common denominator. And instead of trying to encourage excellence in a few people, it tries to encourage mediocrity in a large number of people. So that Lane Tech today doesn't have W9WKR. That was abolished. Couldn't be bothered with anything like that. Racial integration is more important than education for the races. The opportunity for technical schools isn't there. The opportunity to feel like you're part of something in a community that knows you, of course, can't be there when there are things like busing and other programs which take precedence over helping our children excel. Now, there's another thing that's different about education today, and it impacts on amateur radio. What you're doing when you're 15 determines what you're doing when you're 35 and 45 and 55 and so forth. And if you're a jerk when you're 15, you're going to be a jerk when you're 50. What we have to do is not worry so much about whether children pass or fail a course. What's really important is that we teach our children to learn to accept risk. And what's really sad and really breaks my heart as I look back on why our country didn't do what I thought it would be doing when I entered my 20s, is that our children, instead of being provided with an opportunity in high school to fail and succeed, is if you prevent failure, you prevent success. It's the other side of the same coin. Grades are supposed to be important. A lot of stuff that's nonsense is supposed to be important. But you have to remember that 90% of what I was taught back in high school today is somewhere on the locus between superstition and nonsense. I'm not saying that there were only four elements back there, earth, air, fire, and water, when I studied chemistry, but it's an entirely different business today.
On the other hand, today you find kids in junior high and elementary school already at that level starting to learn computers, so that's not entirely bad.
Well, they don't learn computers, yeah. if you go into the public school system and you look at what the kids are doing, they're taking canned programs and they're typing numbers in and the computers are spitting out very predictable results. What I would like to do is start a program where we give people a box that sort of runs and say, look, hook this up to the outside world and let's see if it can gather information on its own and make its own analysis. So what's the difference between imaging and graphics? Graphics is the use of a computer to visualize anything you have in your mind, whether or not that's real or not. Imaging is the use of a computer to accept real signals from the outside world, put them into a form in which you can conceptualize and maybe make an intelligent decision about that. What I would like to see is students building interfaces between their computers and the real world and going off and learning how to write programs so that they can analyze data and do things that are not entirely predictable. I think back about a question that I got one time from a former professor of mine at the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business. This is after I received my MBA there. And he called me up and said, Shell, we're thinking about buying a computer. This is the machine we want to buy. We have $100,000, and this is what we want to spend it on. And I said, Professor Roberts, look, if you do that, all you're going to do is duplicate the work that somebody else has done and buy a machine that has been designed by a marketing committee. Why don't you go ahead, since this is the business school at the University of Chicago, and split that $100,000 up into five packages of $20,000 each, assign five professors to head design groups, and go out to the young people here in the Chicagoland area and say, look, we're going to offer a prize to the team that builds the most innovative computer for statistical analysis and see what you get, because $20,000 buys an awful lot of parts. And the answer came back, well, we're afraid to do that because that entails risk.
You're listening to a 1989 conversation Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP, had with the late Shell Epstein, K9APE, a former volunteer counsel for the ARRL, businessman and most articulate engineer. We'll conclude this Dayton Hamvention conversation in a moment. This is The Rain Report, available on Twitter at hashtag TheRainReport and 24/7 online at TheRainReport.com.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
That brings us up to the major failing of education. Engineering is a very risk-oriented business. When you come to me and you say, Shell, I want you to build something, what's it going to cost me? And I say to you, Hap, well, it's going to cost you X dollars. What I'm really saying is I'm betting you, Hap, X dollars that I can build this thing and it'll satisfy your requirements, because if I don't satisfy your requirements, you're not going to pay me. When I look at teachers, whether it be in the public system or the private system or the college system, the one personal attribute that they have is that they are extremely risk adverse. And every discussion with teachers always, when you talk about what's the problem with the educational system in our country, always boils down to teachers need more security. They need a tenure system, they need contracts, they need laws, they need things that prevent people from firing them. Well, that isn't engineering. I've learned a few things about life, one of which is in the selection of a mate to marry, you look for people who have personal attributes you believe that are important to you, but which you yourself lack. But as a teacher, you look for personal attributes which you believe are important and which the student has. Teachers, almost without exception, are risk-adverse people. Yet these risk-adverse people are making the determination as to who gets into engineering school and who doesn't get into engineering school. And they're picking the wrong people. So engineering turns out not to be as exciting today as it could be. I mean, you have to remember, my little business builds its own custom ICs. It doesn't take an enormous investment to do that. But you don't see it taught in the high schools. You don't even see it taught in the colleges. And yet, for a few $1,000s, you can build your own custom integrated circuits today. Well, we've got to have the excitement of amateur radio, which is, what's the difference between amateur radio and the telephone system? In large measure, the telephone system, you stick your quarter in, you know that you're going to talk to somebody on the other end, otherwise the machine's not going to eat your quarter. Whereas an amateur radio, there's no guarantee at all when you plug that rig in that you aren't going to blow the fuse, let alone talk to somebody. And it's a different mindset. I think amateur radio is an enormously important educational resource for this country, particularly for people who get rejected by the conventional education and diploma game, but nevertheless want to earn engineering credentials. I spent a number of years as a patent attorney. The thought in applying for a patent is to take a combination of individual elements, each element in its own being known and well known, and put them together in a combination which is unique, such that the result is not only unique but is unobvious and useful. If you look at it in terms of just a statistics problem, when I entered amateur radio in 1954, there were at my disposal, I don't know, maybe 2,000 components that I could have purchased or acquired. But if you bought a 12AU7, that's all it ever was a dual triode thing in a 9-pin in a glass envelope. It had a certain transconductance curve, and that's all you could do with it. Back then we had tube manuals, and a tube manual was like about 200 pages, maybe less. Today I pay $125 for a subscription to IC Master, which I believe for 1989 is going to be a three-volume set. I think the last edition we got of it was like 2,000 pages in a volume. Now it's going to three volumes. You've got all these parts. Okay, now, if you just look at PLDs, programmable logic devices, you can go ahead and take those parts and configure them to be anything you want. You can build application-specific integrated circuits with your IBM personal computer. You can build enormous numbers of things and try enormous numbers of experiments. And now we're not even getting out of terrestrial radio. When you start to talk about extraterrestrial radio and satellites and the possibility of Project Cyclops actually detecting life in outer space, and my judgment will be that the first time we communicate with another being in outer space, it's going to be a ham that does it, and not necessarily a government-funded project like Cyclops. The opportunities to learn more about our world and discover new things. Can you imagine what amateur radio is going to be like when the Chinese move from their presently 8 licensed stations to maybe 1 million? And we're going to be able to communicate with people all over Asia on a regular basis. My only regret in life is that I'm 50 and not 25 or 30, because I'd love to see what we're going to do in the 21st century.
Some thoughts on kids' education and ham radio from Shell Epstein, K9APE, an engineer, attorney, and businessman from Wilmette, Illinois. Based on Epstein's observations, do young people really hold the key to amateur radio's future? I wonder. I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP in Chicago.
In case you've tuned in a little late, this week's Rain Rerun interview was recorded at the Dayton Hamvention in 1989. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.
And that concludes our first conversation with the late Shell Epstein, K9APE, a former volunteer counsel for the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League, businessman and articulate engineer. We'll bring you a second thought-provoking conversation with Shell from 2003 next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2014 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for everyone connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from The Rain Report. www.therainreport.com.